thinking sideways.
I don't understand.
Does not compute.
You never know.
Insufficient data to formulate a reply.
What?
Stories of things we simply don't know the answer to.
Well, hey, everybody, and welcome again to another episode of Thinking Sideways, the podcast. I am Steve. Of course, I am joined by...
Devin.
And Joe.
And once again, we got a mystery.
Yeah.
We managed to fish another one out.
We did. We got one.
Yeah, there's still a couple left in the world.
Only
like
a few.
Shooting fish in a barrel. Anyway, so today we are going to talk about another historical mystery, because I'm evidently on a historical mystery bend.
I think some of us are, yeah. Like we did the runestone.
Yeah.
Too. That was mine, even.
Yeah. Yeah, we really have.
That was a scary one.
We're gonna have to deal with some killing soon.
Yeah, it's gotta happen.
For my last one that we just did, I was like, you know, knife edge. Do I do a disappearance or do I do a murder? And I was leaning heavily towards murder.
Knife edge, yeah, nice. Yeah.
So my next one, I think, is going to be a real bloody, disgusting murder.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about this non-bloody, non-murder story.
Mm-hmm.
The mystery we're going to talk about today is, did Frederick Cook make it to the North Pole to be the first man in recorded history to make it there?
Yeah.
Now, before we get into the story, of course, as normal, we got this from one of our listeners, because you guys suggest so many great stories.
God, you're... Yes.
Yeah.
Thanks, listeners.
We got this one from Don.
Thanks, Don.
I can't remember if Don was on Facebook or email, but thank you, Don, regardless of how you sent it in to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, you know, the weird thing about trying to be the first person to reach the North Pole is, how do you prove it? You know, you can't plant a flag there.
You can't. And yeah, we're going to go into some of that. But part of what makes this mystery so weird is that Frederick Cook, when he came back, he shortly thereafter discovered that he wasn't the only one claiming to have reached the North Pole at the same time, basically. There's a guy, I know Devin's going to laugh because she's been laughing all day. But according to the history books, the man to reach the North Pole first was Rear Admiral Robert Perry.
Yeah, I don't think he did.
I've got my opinions, but I'm going to hold that till we get through all of this.
Okay.
So let's talk about Mr. Cook.
Captain Cook?
No. Not Captain Cook. Frederick Cook was born in New York in 1865, and he grew up. He became a surgeon. He almost immediately started exploring. He kind of had the bug. Initially, he wasn't really big on the idea, but his wife and child, they died in childbirth, and he wanted to get away, and it was a great excuse. And so he started going on expeditions. Initially, he was serving as the surgeon of the team that he would go with.
Mm-hmm.
And then after several years, started making his own or getting his own expeditions set up and then finding people to finance it. And he'd go out in the world.
Yeah. Cool. His first expedition was with Robert Perry. Correct?
It was with Robert Perry.
The Rear Admiral.
Yeah.
They were actually on better terms once upon a time.
Yes, they were. They were
bitter rivals.
And you know, that's the thing is, see, it was the 1891 to 92 Arctic expedition is the one that he went on with Perry. But and yeah, there was no bad blood between them. Actually, I'm pretty sure that if I remember correctly, Cook saved his life.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, because Perry broke his leg so badly.
Yeah. Well, there was that time, but also the time that Perry was kind of lost or marooned up there.
And he went and hunted him down.
Hunted him down and treated him for sickness and brought him back.
Yeah.
I mean, so he really saved his bacon twice.
He did.
Yeah.
So yeah, these guys got along. You know, they didn't have any animosity, at least in the beginning. Though I will say that from everything that I've read, Cook was a bit different than Perry, and most of the explorers who were operating at the end of the 19th and the beginning of the 20th century, right in that 1900 time frame. Most guys, they'd go to an area, they'd hire a local crew, and then they would tell them what to do and ignore them. That was kind of the status quo. Cook wasn't like that. He learned the language. He got to know the people. And he was more interested in the locals or as much interested in the locals as what he was there to find.
So he was like being a good guy or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think Cook actually was a pretty decent guy. despite all the bad things that have been said about him.
I would agree with that, absolutely.
Yeah.
The first record that Cook wanted to set or tried to set was in 1906 when he tried to be and said that he successfully was the first man to climb to the peak of Mount McKinley.
Mm.
Yeah.
You might or you might not be familiar with the name McKinley because today, officially, the name is not McKinley. I believe it's Denali, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
But
which is the traditional indigenous name for it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But most folks in the would know it as McKinley, and we're going to keep using that name because anytime you do the reading, it's always referred to that. So just to keep it
easy. Because it was.
It was at the time, yeah. The reason that he wanted to climb it is, if you don't know McKinley, it's in the basically the middle of Alaska. It's in the, is it the Denali Range?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the Denali Range.
There's like a national park.
Yeah.
But it's like, and it's a huge mountain, right?
It's absolutely huge. It is, here, let me grab the number, 18,000 feet from base to peak. And the peak itself is just over 20,000 feet above sea level.
Yeah.
So it's really freaking high up there.
Yeah, that's a tall mountain.
And a lot of people had tried to make it to the peak. And a lot of people would climb the lower reaches of it and then stop.
Right.
I think most people would go to what's called the gateway. That was the farthest they would go. But what happens? Cook says, I'm going to climb this. He takes his party. They get most of the way up. Then he takes one other man with him, and he climbs to what he says is the top, takes pictures, comes back, and says, I made it to the top. And everybody went, okay.
Cool.
Yeah. Great. Okay, well, congrats. We'll put your name in this little book we have right here of people who did things first.
Yeah. But there was obviously some dispute about that later, right?
We're talking about this now because it does come up later.
Cool.
Oh, and because this is going to be important. Remember I said he took one person with him to the top of McKinley?
Mm-hmm.
That guy's name is Ed Burrill. So remember that name because it will come up in a bit.
Okay.
So the climb on McKinley was in 1906.
Oh, did he plant a flag or anything like that when he went up there?
He went up there. I've seen a photo that is him holding a flag, but he's on the tippy-top peaky bit. You know, like there's not a whole lot at the actual peak.
The tippy-top peaky bit. Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course.
So I don't know that he planted the flag. There's a picture of him holding it.
Yeah.
But I never saw anything that said he specifically planted it.
Okay.
But he did that in 1906. Then he went home, and he began planning his next Arctic expedition. And in 1907, he went to Greenland. And while he was in Greenland, he then announced that what he was going to do was try to reach the North Pole. And I think he made the announcement, I want to say, it was in August of 1907. He couldn't actually leave, I believe, until February. Because that was when...
Got to wait for the ice to freeze up, right?
Yeah. He had to... So the timing of it was very, very specific. The thing that you need to know about where he left is he left from a place, and I hope I get this right, Aniwetok, I believe is how you pronounce the name of the village. It's an Inuit village in Greenland. It's on the northwest tip of Greenland. So it's really pretty far up there.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go for Aniwetok.
Okay, well, the trip from that village to the actual where they say the North Pole is going to be is 700 miles.
Okay.
So it's a 700-mile overland journey in ice and snow and basically terrible conditions is what he's going to do.
Well, I think, you know, for the first part of it, I think there were still, like caribou or things like that wandering around.
There were animal around.
Even out onto the pack ice, so they were actually able to hunt for the
first
part. Yes,
they were. They were for part of the beginning. And it wasn't as if he took, for the final bit of his race to the North Pole, he took two local Inuit with him. But he didn't just start out with those two guys. I think he left, if I remember correctly, he left as part of a bigger party.
Yeah.
And then he and that party split ways. They were going to do something else. And then he made his run for the North Pole. The trip wasn't expected to take but a month or two. everybody figured Cook was gone. When a year had gone by, they figured that everybody had died.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a reasonable assumption.
He and his companion showed back up at the village 14 months later.
Wow.
Looking a little worse for the wear, as I understand.
Yeah, absolutely worse from wear. What happened is they made the run for the North Pole. They got there, according to Cook. They made it to the North Pole, and they didn't take into consideration the movement of the ice floes. They didn't think that, I guess, that they were going to be a problem, but they totally were. They ended up hitting open water. They had to make all these detours, and they ended up southwest of where they wanted to be by 200 or 300 miles.
Yeah, I think wasn't he expecting the ice to move eastward and it wound up moving westward instead?
Yes, that's exactly. It went the opposite direction. So he's like, well, I'll just keep going straight south and it'll always be okay. But everything's moving under your feet. That doesn't work. Here is the data bits, the data points that we'll use here for his actual trip. From when they split off of that larger party, they traveled, according to Cook, 360 miles, and they did that in 24 days.
Okay.
That comes out to an average of about 15 miles a day, which is pretty good pace in the Arctic. When you consider it's not smooth ice, it's going to be ice floes that are going to heave, it's craggy, it's nasty. I decided I'd go ahead and take a look and pull a Joe. I'd go on Google Earth and Google Maps and take a look at the North Pole.
Oh,
did you go on Street View?
Well, it turns out you can't because there's nothing there.
There's no streets?
There's no streets. And here's the problem. Unlike the South Pole, there is no landmass at the North Pole. So it's not an actual fixable point. You can't, as you said with the top of the mountain, plant a flag.
Well, you can. I think.
But it's not going to stay in the same spot.
No, it's not. It's going to move up. Perry supposedly planted a flag.
He did and he didn't. He planted ceremonially a flag and then pulled it down. Left a bit of it in a tube in a crevasse.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't actually even bother to try to leave the flag there because that just wasn't going to do any good.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything, yeah.
But okay. The point is, it's constantly, it's a moving target.
Sure.
As I said, though, you know, of course, they missed the mark when they were coming home. I found the number here. It was 400 miles because they ended up living in a cave on what is known as Devon Island. Mm-hmm. So it's your island.
Well, it's spelled wrong, but yeah.
Not according to the internet.
That's true. Yeah. Apparently, that is how you spell my name.
People misspell your name. Sure, it's Steve and Joe Islands anywhere nearby?
No, there isn't. But they ended up living in a cave. They barely survived off of local animals. I mean, they were killing. They were hunting. When they ran out of ammo, they were hunting with spears, which is pretty hardcore, if you ask me, in the Arctic.
Yeah,
they managed to get back to the village. They arrived in the spring of 1909. So they left February of 08 and arrived back 14 months later in 09. So that's a heck of a long trip.
Yeah, it is.
Cook would eventually make the initial announcement that he had made it to the North Pole. That would be the date that he said he got there would be the 22nd of April, 1908, which means that, you know, he made it there in about 2 months from when he initially left, which is pretty good time.
Not bad.
I think, Joe, it was you that said they were looking a little worse for wear for living off of just whatever animal they could kill, and hiking in freezing conditions.
Probably a scurvy, at least, huh?
Yeah, at least to some degree. But when they got back to the village, of course, Cook wasn't just going to turn around and head home. He hung out for a while to recuperate. While he was in the village, he met a man named Harry Whitney, and they became kind of buds. They were both English speakers. I'm sure that helped in a village where, you know, it's Inuits, and he could speak the local language. Both of them could, but it's always nice to be able to use your native tongue. I'm sure that was something to bond over.
Yeah.
Whitney was there on, I wouldn't call it a safari, but he was on kind of a sportsman's trip. So he had been dropped off by a ship. It was set to come back for him several months later, and he was just kind of having a good time. And he told Cook, hey, you know, I got the ship coming. If you want, you could just hook a ride with me and I'll take you back down to New York and you can go home.
That's what he probably should have done, huh?
Well, I think he probably should have, yes and no, because of the way things turned out. But Cook didn't want to wait that long, so instead, he decided to book or plan out another overland journey to head down the coast of Greenland by sled and go all the way to go home, or as far south as he could till he could catch a boat at one of the major lanes. What ended up happening, though, is he had two guys set up to go with him. The day before he's going to leave, one of them got sick, and so it was just going to be Cook and one other Inuit, and that really put him in a bind because he couldn't take all of his stuff with him, because one sled down means one sled's worth of stuff you can't pack.
Yeah, and you're going to have to bring other stuff, like food.
He's got to bring food. So Whitney, being a good guy, said, hey, you know, if you want to leave that stuff with me when my ship gets here, I'll totally bring it to you. No big deal. So he left all the heavy stuff that he didn't need. So his navigational tools, like a sextant, all of his records, except for his own personal diary or his journal. I guess it wouldn't be a diary.
Yeah.
It'd be his journal. It was his journal. They call it his journal. It's manly if it's a journal.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, just because he had stars and it was pink doesn't count. It was a journal. Yeah, it was manly.
Sequins.
Just because it said Dear Diary at every entry doesn't mean it was a diary.
But he left all that stuff with him because it was heavy, and he didn't need any navigational equipment because he was just heading down the coastline. It's pretty easy to follow the coastline. So he goes ahead. He heads south. He eventually gets home. He makes the announcement that he had done it, and great. On the 1st of September, the world learns that Frederick Cook was the first man to make it to the North Pole.
He didn't just tweet it out?
He didn't tweet it out.
Yeah. Why not?
He didn't have service there.
Oh, I guess that's true.
Yeah. It's way up there.
Yeah.
Can't just do that.
AT&T will cover you up there.
Are you sure about that?
No, I've never tested it.
It'll cover me in my house.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going to leave Cook's story for the moment.
I thought we were talking about Cook.
We are, but there's another big player, and we need to switch gears, and we've talked about him a little bit already, and that's Robert Perry.
Yes.
Perry, as we had talked about before, he had made a bunch of Arctic expeditions. You know, he'd gone with Cook, or Cook had been with him a couple of times. Perry had made, if I remember the number, it's something like 8 or 9 attempts to get to the North Pole.
Yeah, and then that...
8 or 9 failed attempts before his last attempt, which he will learn he says was successful.
Yeah, and the reason Cook did stop going along with him in these expeditions, did you hear about that? He wanted to sign up, but then Perry put down the requirement that nobody was allowed to write their memoirs of the expedition before he published his.
Yes, which is a financial reason, because, of course, everybody sold their story. Mm-hmm. So that means that, oh, great, I'll pay you whatever I pay you, but you can't make any actual bonus money until it's, you know, your story's worthless.
Yeah,
so,
pretty much.
And one of the things I think Cook was writing more about things like the locals and that kind of stuff, which wasn't even going to step on Perry's toes. But that you're right. That is the reason that they did part ways. On the 1st of March, 1909, Perry left for the North Pole. He went ahead. He was already in the Arctic. He says, I'm going to go. He gets his big party together, and he and this large party that he has, they head 280 miles north, heading towards the North Pole. And they didn't leave from Greenland. They left from a different location that actually longitudinally put them closer to the North Pole.
Mm.
But he was still kind of in that same region,
because
that evidently is where you start from.
In the Arctic Circle.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. On the 1st of April of 1909, Perry split off from the main big group that he had with him. He took 5 other guys with him, and they then would make the final dash for the North Pole. They did that in 6 days.
So this was a year after Cook said he had...
Right. Okay. This is when Cook is still presumed missing.
Right.
Okay. And so, yeah.
Just
yeah,
wanted to make sure.
Yep. Yeah. No, so this, it is weird when you read it, because, technically, Cook found it a year prior before Perry ever got there.
Sure. Yeah, but he was still missing. So.
But he, yeah, so he's missing. So Cook, you know, Perry's like, well, nobody's got it yet. I'm going for it.
Yeah.
Because that evidently was his white whale at that point.
Mm, I think it was everybody's white whale.
Yeah, I plan to do it.
So he goes with these guys, and they go to what Robert Perry says is the North Pole. He says, we've got the North Pole. He plants his ceremonial flag. He then, like I said, tore off a strip of it, put it in a little jar, and buried it in a crevasse, and they beat feet back out of the circle. And when he got back to the party, then they go back to their launch point. Everything's hunky-dory, except that at that point, he kind of just starts lollygagging around the area. He's, you know, they're steaming from place to place. Mm. They're going on little hunting trips. They're just kind of having a good old time. He's in no hurry to get back to the civilized world and announce that he made it to the North Pole.
Oh, you'd think he would be.
I would too, but maybe it was I'm basking in the fact that I finally did it. I finally achieved what I'm after all this time. I mean...
Well, I'm sorry. Did you say earlier that he said they were at the North Pole? Can you clarify that?
Okay, yeah. Perry was the only one of the six, because he had the five other men with him, who had the ability to navigate.
Oh. Yeah, he's the only one that could use a sextant, right?
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And you got to remember is that, and this is, Joe might have to help me out on this to how you would navigate, but you use a sextant to find two fixed points and figure out the distance between them. And as they change, you use that to figure out your longitude. Is that correct, Joe?
I think that's how it works.
Okay.
I don't use a sextant.
I don't either. But the point is that you use it to fix on this point. And so he would have to take readings. And when nothing is north of you, everything is south, that means you're at the North Pole.
Sure.
But he's the only one who could do it. So he's the one doing all of the readings. Mm. So he's the one that has done all of that, I'll call it the hard math, figure it out.
And sure.
Isn't it... I seem to recall something in the story around that one of his assistants was a black guy. I can't remember his name now. And they're just at this place, and one day this assistant says, you know, this place has kind of a North Pole-y feeling to it, don't you think, Admiral?
And he says something,
and he says basically, yeah, I think you're onto something there. And he pulls out the flag and everything.
Yeah, that is what that guy says.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right. That's not the version I know that you will read from Perry himself, of course.
Sure. Yeah,
he's not going to put it that way.
No.
Well, I think, you know, in retrospect, if I were either one of these guys, Cook or Perry, I would have made sure I had several people in my party and that every single one of them knew how to navigate.
Actually, you know, the funny point is, what we're getting into here is that if you haven't already figured it out from what we're leading up to, there becomes dual claim for being the first person to go to the North Pole between Perry and Cook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The guy who ended up being the first man to reach the South Pole because of, and I think he did it in 1911, but everything that went on between these two, which it turns into a giant public battle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's a big mud fest.
This guy made sure to double, triple check all kinds of things and leave all kinds of signs and all kinds of markers. Like, he dotted every T crossed every T and dotted every I.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
got that backwards.
Was that guy's name, like Roald Amundsen or something like that?
That was his first name, and I'm not positive on the pronunciation. I listened to it a couple of times, and I'm still not sure. But the point is, that's why he went to such extremes.
Uh-huh. Smart move, dude.
So Perry finally makes it to Greenland.
He gets to Greenland, and when he gets there, he starts hearing rumors that Cook is back, that Cook wasn't dead, and that he's back, and that, hey, he's also claiming that he made it to the North Pole the year before you did.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, wait a minute, that's not possible. And he ends up getting to the same village where Whitney and Cook had been.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Whitney is still there because he's just having his little sportsman vacation. And Perry talks to him and says, well, what do you know about this? Cook and Whitney had talked, and Cook had told him, he said, listen, don't tell anybody. Until I've made my official announcement, don't tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so he plays dumb. He's like, well, I don't know. I mean, he said he went north and had some expedition, but I'm not really sure. Perry then goes on and tracks down the two Inuit that went with Cook, and he interviews them. And he basically interrogates him. And he takes away from it. And he will later learn he makes all these statements about how they disagreed with what Cook is claiming. But what you need to know is that natives of the area at that time, they didn't have an understanding of latitude and longitude. They knew distances in days. Took me a day to get there. So we walked north for X number of days. That's all they knew.
And it was Perry didn't speak the language.
He didn't speak the language. So they're, you know, and he's showing them maps and they're just kind of drawing on it. Whitney, who does know the language, talks to them after the fact. And he went on record and said, they said they didn't know what the angry white man was asking them and what the pieces of paper that he kept pointing at meant. They didn't understand.
Yeah.
But Perry didn't care. So once he figures that out, well, that lights a fire underneath him get back to the mainland and stop all this. Here's the other thing that really, really, really bites Cook in the rear. And that is the fact that Whitney, remember he had a ship chartered to come back and pick him up?
Yeah.
His ship never showed up.
Oh.
So that meant he'd have to wait there at the tip of Greenland for another 6 months before another ship would come to take him home. And he really wasn't keen on that idea. Well, being such a nice guy, Perry says, "Hey, we'll give you a ride home, no big deal." Except when he brings all of his stuff down to the ship to load it up, Perry specifically stops him and says, "Hey, is any of that stuff Cook's?" And he has to admit, well, yeah, there's these trunks here that belong to him. He says, "I don't want any of that on my ship."
What a jerk.
Total jerk move.
Yeah.
Some of the things that go on in this story make me think that he did that very intentionally, knowing that it was going to screw Cook over.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
So poor Whitney, what's he do? He goes over to some rocks, he digs a big hole, and he buries them so at least they're sort of secure and Cook could come back for him.
I mean, has anybody actually gone out looking for these things?
I imagine they've never been found again. But they've never shown up, which makes me feel that probably if anybody found them after a couple of years, they were probably destroyed anyway.
Probably trashed, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they would have been buried in permafrost, which is okay, but still, they're trunks, not like they're totally waterproof.
Oh,
there is
going to
be some moisture, and that's going to just destroy paperwork and tools in no time flat. So we move forward. Perry now gets to work on destroying Cook's claim. He meets up with some of his supporters. What are these guys called? They are the...
The Perry Arctic Club?
Yes, the Perry Arctic Club, which is a bunch of well-off dudes.
Of course it is.
Who financially back his expeditions.
Mm-hmm.
And they get together and they start doing some kind of devious stuff. First off, what Perry does is he tells everybody, of course, that, hey, I got there and Cook is totally full of it.
Mm-hmm.
He communicates that a week after Cook has said he got there. Perry's information comes through and says, A, hey, I totally got there. And B, Cook's a liar and I've got the evidence to prove it. Then when he gets back to the world, everybody says, well, great, let's see your documents. And he says, no, I will go ahead and put out my fully authorized version as soon as Cook gives you his. A bit of a game of I'll show you mine if you show me yours,
mm-hmm.
knowing full well that Cook can't.
Because mm-hmm. He made Whitney
bury it all in the Arctic.
Yeah.
I got to say, I think that between this two, not to give it away or anything, I think Cook behaved with a lot more class in this thing than Perry
Cook
did.
Ended up for the rest of his life getting the short stick.
He
absolutely got the short stick, though in a way it seems to have given him peace, but he really got hosed a bunch after this.
Oh, yeah.
That was where I was headed, though, was the Perry Arctic, whatchamacallit, what were they?
Club.
The club, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, his fan club. They did what was so common at that time and so despicable is, if you remember, we talked about how Cook had been the first to go all the way to the top of Mount McKinley, and he took the other gentleman, Burrill, with him.
Uh-huh.
Well, for years, Burrill had been going around publicly saying, "We made it to the top. It's so awesome," telling everybody about it. Until suddenly, on the 4th of October, 1909, an affidavit from him that is signed comes out saying that they faked the whole thing and it's a total lie.
Mm-hmm.
What would make somebody do that?
It's somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000 at the time.
So, like,
they totally blatantly paid him off. They made no claim that they hadn't done it. Or Burrill never, ever even pretended that he hadn't been paid off. It's equivalent to like $125,000 U.S. today. So that's a huge chunk of change. Yeah. I can see why he would turn on him for the money. I mean, mm-hmm. it's kind of despicable, but I understand.
It kind of is, yeah. But then he, by pretty much acknowledging that he was bribed to sign that affidavit.
He did.
Yeah, then, you know, doesn't that provide a little ammunition to Cook?
It should have.
Yeah.
It should have. And I never could get a good, clear understanding of why Cook went about doing things the way he did. He had his journal, and so he could provide that. And in the beginning, the public believed him. But because of all the underhanded moves that Perry was pulling, they started not believing him. And I think he realized he was defeated, and he stopped fighting. I think that's probably what happened for the most part.
He probably spent a lot of time, like, you know, on the McKinley thing, he probably spent a lot of time just really, really wishing that he had buried something at the top of the mountain.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Probably.
That's what I'd be thinking.
Yeah. Well, after that affidavit shows up, then, of course, this is where Perry comes out with his account of what Cook's companions.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of the right word for him. His companions, quote unquote, said about him and the route that they took. I won't go into detail, but basically they, according to him, sketched out this completely different route, meaning that Cook just took them kind of in a circle and in a completely the wrong direction intentionally. Mm-hmm. Is what this is making it out to be.
Mm. Yeah, did Whitney ever show his head again?
No, not really. I mean, Whitney came out and said, "Hey, I had to do this." He publicly said, "I had to do this. This is what Perry made me do."
You mean leaving the stuff behind?
Leaving the stuff behind. And he, you know, he said that Cook had told him that he had made it to the North Pole, but it's secondhand information.
Yeah, you don't know. But yeah. But he had overheard the conversation when Perry was interrogating the two Inuits, right?
Correct.
And so, did he ever show up and say, "Hey, no, that the Inuits did not say this to Perry. He's lying"?
We know that there are written accounts of it. I don't know the exact interaction of did he show up at some legal proceeding or something, because there really was only one legal proceeding, and by that time that happened, it was way too late. Mm. And so it may have been wasted breath.
Yeah, the
or maybe he was on safari
again.
Yeah, probably.
I think probably the nail that really kind of sealed the coffin for Cook, though, mm-hmm. was the National Geographic Society, because they were a big backer of Perry. They loved him. They were, you know, totally supported him, always published his stuff. He drew in people for them. They went ahead and they immediately said that Perry was right and Cook was wrong. And then later on, they set up a committee to go ahead and investigate the whole thing, which, of course, because there was no papers from Cook, that was easy. They went ahead and checked out Perry's story. They did it in a matter of 3 days. That's all it took for them to go ahead and figure it out.
Check out Perry's story.
Perry's story.
And this committee was like mostly his friends, right?
Yes. Yeah. Two of the people he knew extremely well. And one of them said that, I think he came out and said that he was the skeptic. He was a total skeptic, but I get the feeling he also mm-hmm. knew Perry as well personally. They all knew him personally, so mm-hmm. it was totally an inside job.
Yeah.
And that really was the end of it. And for years and years and years, everybody learned that Robert Perry went ahead and made it to the North Pole, and he was the first one, and nobody really knows who Cook is.
Yeah.
He's not really in any of the history books. He's just one little footnote because of this schmear campaign.
Then it was a schmear campaign.
Absolute mud-flinging contest.
Yeah, he's, again, Perry was not a classy guy.
No. But that is the end of our story, which means we are now into the theory section.
What?
Oh, yep. Cool.
So this is really, it's three simple theories. There's only three headings here. And the first one is, of course, that Cook made it there before Perry. Mm-hmm. We don't have any documents to back this up, but he was the first person to ever describe the frozen polar sea, as being in continuous motion. And at 88 degrees north, the fact that he basically encountered a giant flat-topped, as he described it, ice island that was higher and thicker than the sea ice around it.
That was a fixed object, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
and that was something that was backed up by later explorers who went to the area.
They found the same thing, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Perry never makes any mention of that.
Yeah, of mm-hmm. course, if he went a different route, he could have missed it. You know,
absolutely true. Perry, or Cook, excuse me, also seemed to be pretty good at his navigation. I mean, he knew how to use the sextant. He had been guiding himself for a while on these kind of Arctic thing or expeditions. I don't know why I said things.
Yeah.
Stream of consciousness here needs to stop. But overall, as you said, he seemed to be a pretty honest guy.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't seem to be the kind of guy that would just, to grab glory, say that he did something.
Yeah,
that's my personal impression.
Yeah, it's my impression too. Is that Cook had a much deeper sense of honor than mm-hmm. Perry had, and that he wouldn't have deliberately faked it.
A gentleman's honor.
There was. I think there was some question that he was making mistakes in his navigation,
which is entirely possible.
It is entirely possible, and quite possibly, probably true even. But if they were honest mistakes, so he might have honestly thought that he was at the North Pole.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, there's an easier way than using a sextant. You just lay on the ground, looking straight up, and when the North Star is right over you, you're at the North Pole. Nothing to it.
Not easy.
Yeah, it's that easy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, if only they had known that.
I know.
This whole thing would have been solved. I laid on my back. The North Star was directly above me.
Yeah, there you go.
It was really easy. It's fine.
It all felt really North Pole-y.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. North Pole-y?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to let that go. Our next theory is, of course, that Frederick Cook faked the entire thing. The quote-unquote loss of all of his data, well, that means that we can't confirm that he really did it.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that if we had gotten his records, we'd have figured out quite easily that he was full of it. Mm-hmm. And that he didn't know what he was doing. So there is that absolute possibility. I mean, you also got to think about the fact this guy was lost for a year in the Arctic.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got back to his starting point, he could have said, you know what? I survived that. I deserve something for going through all that crap. I'm going to say that I got there because I've earned it.
Or, for all I know, we got there.
Yeah. And intentionally, directly knowing that he was pretty sure that he didn't actually do it. Yeah. That's completely plausible.
Yeah.
One thing, and again, this is my lack of understanding of the sextant, though I've read about it so many times, it still just doesn't sink in. One of the things that his detractors will point out is the fact that trying to use a sextant at that time of the year is going to be not exactly reliable because a lot of times you use the sun as a reference point. But the sun was so low in the horizon all the time that it's basically a useless point to fix to.
Mm-hmm. But I have no idea how often they had clear days. You could also use stars.
That's a good point. And I haven't seen any data, I mean, none of us have actually, that says, was it cloudy or was it clear when they were making that final drive?
Mm-hmm.
If it was clear, it totally makes sense. But this information gives me the impression that it wasn't clear days, and so he was fixing his position based on the sun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be hard if it was cloudy and the sun's under the horizon. Well, yeah.
We've all seen the sun go down and it's on the horizon and because of the atmosphere. It's not going to look or be where it actually is. It's going to have the distortion issue.
Oh, yeah.
Final theory, they both, either intentionally or not, faked it. Both Perry and Cook didn't get to the North Pole, and both of them probably knew it. That's what this theory is getting at.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, we've already talked about Cook, so I think probably we need to talk about the second half of this, which is Perry. Turns out there's problems with the writings that he left behind, his data from the trip. Now, if you remember, I said that he wouldn't release anything, or hardly anything, just very basic details. Eventually, that his papers would get released about a decade and a half ago. That's how long they were under wraps.
It was that long before they were...
Almost 100 years. Now, the National Geographic Society had them, and they had looked at them, but they didn't release them. And it wasn't until about 10 or 15 years ago that they finally were put out, and people could really, really analyze them. And, well, it turns out that his numbers didn't exactly work. People have tried to trace the route based on what he had, and it doesn't work. So he was probably about 100 miles south of the North Pole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's interesting that they wouldn't release him, but he had a lot of buddies in the NGS, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah.
He did.
Maybe that's why they didn't release him, huh?
Here's the other really hinky thing, and I don't know why this flew, but in the beginning, Devin was laughing at Rear Admiral. Because that was the status that was bestowed upon him by the U.S. House of Representatives. Mm. They gave him the title. There was an act that was passed through that, and then Congress that gave, or not an act. How do you become a Rear Admiral? That it's an honorific.
Okay, so it's an honorary title. So he was never he didn't work his way up through the ranks.
Correct. They gave him an honorary title.
Was he ever even in the Navy?
No.
Oh, okay.
He might have been at one point. But the point is, he was given this title, but one of the things that had to happen first was he had to go and talk to a Naval Affairs subcommittee, and he had to give them some of his stuff to look at, and he gave them his journal that he said he had used on his entire trip to the North Pole. Here's the thing. When these guys are up in the North Pole, it's not like they're packing, kale and carrots and all these great veggies to eat. They're eating what they can. And one of the things that Arctic explorers in the day took with them is what is called pemmican. Kind of looks gross. It's a greasy mix of fat and meat all pressed together. It's kind of like jerky.
Yes, yeah, I like
You'll
that.
You'll see it kind of in a ball sometimes.
Yeah, or in like sort of flat cakes, hockey
pucks. Yeah,
if
you've ever picked up greasy meats and eaten them by hand, you know how much of that stuff gets on your fingers. Now, then combine that with the fact that they're in the Arctic. It's not like they can wash their hands off and their stuff off.
Mm-hmm.
That fingerprints
dirty.
Of that stuff should be on everything.
Yeah,
his book,
the journal.
His journal was pristine to the point that the subcommittee asked him about it, and he stood by the fact of, nope, that's it. That's the one I used. It totally is. And they just kind of shined it on and let it go through.
So he actually swore, if you were totally BSing, I think what I would have said is, it was such a disgusting mess that I just copied the whole thing over to a new book.
Yeah.
That's what I would have told him.
Yeah. I mean, and nobody probably would have said anything if he had said, listen, the other one is kind of going, it's going a little off now because all
rancid.
That grease. Yeah, it's a little rancid, so I had to transfer it.
Yeah.
They probably wouldn't have worried about that.
Yeah, but the This was way back in the day, though, right? And then that did that,
1910.
And did that book, did that journal go back to the National Geographic Society, or did Perry keep it?
I'm not positive. Perry's papers are in more than one place.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know who holds that journal.
Sure somebody somewhere has got it.
Probably.
Yeah.
There's also some issues with the speed that Perry said he traveled, basically.
Yeah, he kind of set some land records there, didn't
he? He really did. He set some land records so that he and his five companions, what is it, they traveled each day. They traveled 25 miles, 20 miles, 20 miles, 25 miles, and then 40 miles.
No.
Uh-huh.
Final day, they traveled 40 miles in that final day to make their destination.
Hmm.
That's 26 miles a day in the Arctic on foot. Bit fast.
Yeah,
really
that's a lot speedier than Cook went, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Cook was averaging 50 miles, which is still pretty good.
Yeah.
But...
40 miles.
Yeah.
No.
You want to hear my favorite detractor of Perry?
Yeah.
This is my absolute favorite. And that is, there is a man by the name of Marshall B. Garner. And he wrote a book called A Journey to the Earth's Interior, which is a hollow earth book, all about the fact that the earth is actually hollow. And says that there is no way that either man actually made it to the North Pole, because as they went north, they would have discovered that the temperature was rising, the ice was melting, and it was going to be open sea because the sun's beams are all focused at the North Pole. And of course, if they had gotten on a boat, they would have gone to the North Pole and discovered the entry to the hollow earth and then been able to explore that. So that obviously is why neither man actually made it to the North Pole.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I don't understand what your problem is. That's accepted science fact.
Yeah. Well, so I guess that's one of the reasons then that the National Geographic Society eventually went back and looked at his and declared that
he didn't actually make
it. Prove it. Yeah, it was unproven.
They went from totally did it. You made it to. The North Pole claim is unproven. Now, of course, left Cook's claim as disproven.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have anything. So they said, well, you're totally making it up. Yeah, I don't have anything to support this claim, so we're just going to throw it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I was going to believe either one of them, I would believe Cook.
Yeah. And the thing is, here's the great thing about Cook. His claim to Mount McKinley, everybody was saying that his pictures were of different areas of the mountain, not past what is called the gateway, which is the final ascent. People have started looking at his writing, and there was actually a Russian team that followed his route based on his writing, and it turns out they made it to the peak.
Yeah, one set of people have actually duplicated his route.
It's a completely unconventional or unstandard way to go to the top. And that's why most people seem to have thrown it out. But it appears that he was telling the truth on that, which is why I'm inclined to believe he probably, at least to the best of his knowledge, was telling the truth about getting to the North Pole.
Mm-hmm. I think he probably was, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, personally, yeah, I think he did it. Or, you know, super close anyway. I think officially the first man to make it to the North Pole, it didn't happen until... It was a guy on skis, and I want to say it was in the 1980s that he did it. And he was supported the whole way by airdrops of supplies. Mm. That's the only way that this guy managed to do it. And, of course, the airdrops help figure out if he's really there.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it wasn't an easy thing to get to.
Uh-huh. No, it's something I probably wouldn't even try to get to. But,
yeah, me neither.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these guys, like, they have... You know, they have some pretty rough times. Like, it was months ago that I read Endurance by F.A. Worsley, who was... That's about Ernest Shackleton and his attempt to get to the South Pole. And that's an amazing story. I highly recommend that story, by the way. And I know we're talking the other end of the Earth, but it's kind of a similar thing. You know, we're talking sleds and dogs and ships crushed in the ice and you know, tales of incredible survival. And these guys went through an amazing set of adventures.
So, well, I mean, over the years, there's countless people have died trying to get to those places. So what I called it earlier. It's kind of the white whale. I'm going to be the one who gets it. And that could be why some of these guys say, to hell with it, I'm going to lie because I've tried so hard, I deserve it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I still think that Cook probably thought he got there, and I think Perry knew well as a lying jerk that he didn't get there, but couldn't admit that he had failed yet again.
Yeah.
And so went on that nasty little smear campaign that he launched.
Yeah, and by the way, when he went public with this whole thing about the Inuit, said they just went out a few miles and then just sort of circled around and came back. Well, that's obviously a lie.
Well, no, they didn't circle around, but they went a totally wrong way.
Yeah, but they didn't. Yeah, but if they had just like sort of gone out there intending to fake it, and then decided, screw it, let's go back home. Well, why were they gone for 14 months?
Got lost.
Yeah, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Got cut
off on the ice.
They were never really lost. I don't think. No, they knew where they were.
They were
floating ice flow, and
Cook figured it out. Yeah. He figured out where they were. That's how he knew how to navigate back to the village.
Yeah, that was his big mistake, though, is he should have taken a few more people with him, and he should have made sure everybody in the expedition knew how to use a sextant.
Again, that's why heading to the South Pole was so well documented, make sure that didn't happen.
Smart move there, yeah.
Yeah, but that's all I've got.
Yeah.
What do you? It sounds like you're in agreement with me on it, Joe.
I think that it's quite likely that Perry lied, and I think it's quite likely. Well, I know he lied about some stuff.
Yeah.
He was not an honorable guy.
He wasn't honest.
No, he was not. I think it's quite possible that Cook actually did make it to the North Pole or somewhere very close to where he, maybe through errors in navigation, felt that he was on the exact spot. I think he was pretty damn close if he wasn't actually on the exact spot.
I agree. I think Perry seems like a jerk.
Yeah.
I saw you starting to use the letter A and then stop.
Yeah. And I think Cook, he's a sympathetic character. You want to be on his side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, the hard part for Cook, remember how I told you he kind of got the short end of the stick for the rest of his life?
Oh, yeah.
He got, I think it was about 10 years later, he started investing in oil fields. And he was sending correspondence and projecting the value of the output of his oil field. And simple version is that somebody challenged it, and then they charged him with mail fraud for fraudulent claims about the value of something. And they sent him to jail for like 10 years, which was, everybody couldn't believe what a harsh judgment it was.
Well, the judge, apparently the prosecutor thought it was overly harsh.
Yeah.
But the judge was, guess what?
A friend of Perry.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the worst part is, turns out that part of Cook's oil field was on one of the giant oil reserves.
Yeah, he wasn't lying at all.
He was. He actually undercut the amount.
He was shy about the
production.
Yeah, for this he gets a good long stay in jail.
Yep.
I mean,
but
part of that due to Perry.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is, I almost wonder if it was a good thing for him, because he said that being in prison, he was a surgeon, he was a doctor in prison, and it was very peaceful for him and very calming, and he could just get away from all the crap that was going on, because he could never outrun it.
Yeah.
So it might have, in a way, been the best thing that Perry could have done for him.
Yeah. But still, the poor guy really suffered, I think.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel bad. Okay, we settled that mystery.
Yes, we totally, at least settled it.
What do you want to talk about now?
How about our website?
Oh, yeah.
Because we've got one of those.
It's lovely.
Yes, we do. It's at thinkingsidewayspodcast.com. We, of course, this episode and all other episodes are on the website. Going to have links to research on there. If you're not listening to us on the website, you can always listen to us through any streaming service. We're on pretty much every one of them. Of course, we're on iTunes. If you are on iTunes and you're listening to the show through there, do take the time to leave us a comment and a rating. Those do help.
Especially high ratings.
Well, we've always said that it helps, but I know that it helps because we continually keep moving upwards in the rankings, and we're getting really high up there, which is awesome.
The rankings, are they based on downloads or are they based on ratings?
It's a combination. It's I don't think Apple tells you exactly what it is.
It's a really complex algorithm. You wouldn't understand.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I bet it would.
Mm. Hipster. we're, of course, on Twitter. You can find us at Thinkin' Sideways, and we do use that. Twitter's actually been really, really busy lately, which is pretty fun. We are on Facebook. You can find us at our Facebook page. You can join the Facebook group. We can have some, there's lots of conversations going on there. We're getting lots of stuff all the time through that. Total fun. So come join us there. And if you're enjoying the podcast and you want to hear more, you can always go ahead and go to Patreon to support the show. Patreon.com/thinkingsideways is where we're at. You can choose to donate however much you want per show. Totally an option, but that is something we have out there. Or if you want to do something that's just a one-timer, we've got the PayPal right there on the website.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping Bill Gates discovers our website or our podcast and pledges $1 million an episode.
It'd be fantastic, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah. No, probably not.
The final thing I got to tell everybody is, of course, about our email address, which is thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com. And go ahead and send us an email if you've got a story suggestion, you've got thoughts, you've got comments, you're looking for more information. We're happy to get them all and we'll field everything. So think that's everything we gotta share here.
I'm pretty sure
you're right.
All right. Well, we're gonna go ahead and close it on out, and we will talk to all you good people next week.
Bye bye.
Bye guys.